Welcome to Career G-Code. In this podcast, you'll hear how everyday people impact the world through their careers. Learn about their journey, career hacks, and obstacles along the way. Whether you're already having the impact you want or are searching for it, this is the podcast for you. On today's episode, we have someone who started their career selling cable boxes and has gone on to manage benefits for companies with global footprints. Let's start the week with Marcelina Mata. So, Marcy, welcome to the show.
Hi, Roddy. How are you?
Well, thanks for taking the time to connect. I know it's crazy times we're living in, and we are all somewhat inside at some points in our lives, or most points in our lives, preferably social distancing. But, you know, it gives us an opportunity to connect electronically and make this happen. So thank you.
No problem. Thank you.
All right. So let's dive right in. Let's tell the world what it is you do for a living.
Hello, everyone. One, thank you for having me on Career Cheat Code. My name is Marcy Mata, better known as Marcelina Mata. I am currently a global benefits manager for Sprinklr. Sprinklr is a social media platform, gathers all your social media in one place for larger enterprises. My role there specifically is to provide benefits to our employee population that are attractive and that we can compete against larger companies to retain employees for a long period of time.
Awesome. How long have you been doing this type of role?
I have been doing benefits, working within HR, because benefits is kind of like a subsidiary of HR, for roughly 8 years, specifically focusing on benefits for the past four and a half years.
Great. Okay. And is this what you always wanted to do for a living?
Hell no. So I'm as transparent as I'm going to be during this interview as I am at work. I always wanted to be a lawyer. In my undergrad, I went to Binghamton University, so SUNY Binghamton. Shout out to all the SUNYs. I went to Binghamton and studied philosophy, politics, and law. Just a fancy way of Binghamton telling you you're in a pre-law with a minor in economics. Subsequently, after graduating back in 2009 during the last economic downfall, that wasn't how things panned out for me. So I went on to work a retail job, worked for Optimum Cablevision in store, quickly tried to reroute my process, my career, took the LSAT, did not do well, but that wasn't going to be my stop. So I went on to pursue a master's, specifically in human resource management. Ironically enough, though I do not have a law degree, I work very closely with attorneys on a day-to-day basis because of my work in benefits to do a lot of compliance, legal research, making sure that you're complying and you're up to date with any changes in the federal or statutory law, depending on the state you live in or the country you live in, because I do global benefits. A lot of my focus is on everything outside of the U.S., so definitely know the U.S. very well, but also focusing on countries like India, anything in Asia, so China, Japan, South Korea, your EMEAs of the world, the U.K., Denmark, Switzerland, so focusing on those countries' specific laws to make sure that we're providing employees the right benefits. So in sum, didn't become a lawyer, but do enough work alongside lawyers, I might as well be one.
Awesome. And that's actually a great point, right? Because I feel like a lot of us, at least in my household, it was lawyer, doctor, engineer, kind of pick your path from there and go with it. But if you had this passion for law, really, you can fulfill that passion without necessarily being a lawyer, right? Like if your goal is to make sure that you are able to look at things, analyze them, interpret in the way that makes most sense, and then have an outcome from there, you can do that without being a lawyer.
Yeah. And I think that's where my angle has been. I have, since forever, had a lot of transferable skills. I know how to write very well. I know how to negotiate. I know how to read and decipher complex policies and readings and kind of bring it down to more layman or understandable terms. So it's been very helpful in my career because of that kind of, what I say, common sense. Like, okay, I know how to read. I know how to negotiate. I know how to write really well. I've used that. What I thought what I was going to use becoming a lawyer, I've used that to my advantage in benefits in HR, negotiating a contract with a vendor, negotiating my own salary, writing proposals, writing policies, having to read 300-page documents to summarize it for an employee in two sentences. So being able to do that, and that's kind of been my world for the past 8 years or so. And to be honest, in high school, I was the biggest rule breaker. Like, I would have never followed a rule. To see myself now working in not only where I do now, but the places I've worked at, kind of making rules so that employees could follow them, I would have laughed at myself. Like, 16-year-old Marcy would laugh at Marcy right now. Because that was not my reality. I was a complete rule breaker well into college. And now I'm just like, oh, is that the handbook? Can we look at the handbook? Let's look at the policy book. That's my MO. It's like, let's make sure we dot our I's and cross our T's so we don't have to be in litigation or in front of a judge trying to decipher what we did wrong to an employee. So it's a very interesting dynamic who I was in high school and in college compared to who I am now.
Where are you from, Marcy?
I am from the Bronx. I am a boogie down Bronxer. Because of what I do, I always say I'm like Sotomayor Cardi B. So I give you a lot of the ratchet, but in a very political and law-abiding way. Every day, it helps me in negotiating. It's like, I'm from the Bronx. Like, don't try that. It's not going to work out very well.
That is a wonderful mix to
have. Yep, Cardi B, Sotomayor. That's usually, that is my combo of people. Cardi B is very smart, very political. She's a little ratchet, a little rough on the edges. It's who I am as well. But also Sotomayor, where I'm by the book. I grew up in a certain environment. My parents are super strict. Like, that's who I am. And it raised me. And I bring that into corporate, in the corporate world all the time. It is very easy for people who, I think, like, the diversity I bring into the workforce is a cheat code. Because it's a lot of common sense. Because we grow up seeing so many things. We grow up in different cultures and growing up in New York City, going to school in New York City, going to school upstate. Like, you grow up with all these different type of people where there are certain things that I look at my colleagues sometimes and I'm like, yeah, they grew very sheltered. Or they grew in a specific school that their parents went to and their great grandparents went to and they've never had anything different. Nor have they worked with anyone different. So I come in there and I'm like, yeah, no, that's not going to work. Or, you sure? Like, I'll question absolutely everything. And I think another cheat code. So the diversity side is a cheat code, 100%. And I will recommend anybody who is very shy on, like, oh, like, I don't really like letting people know that I'm Latino. I don't really like letting know that where I'm from. No, tell them. Tell them where you're from. Tell them who you are. Like, I'm very quick to say I'm from the Bronx. So I'm a competitive, like, I'm a Yankee fan. I tell them that all the time. I tell them who you are so that they understand who they're working with all the time. Like, I think that's a huge cheat code that I've been using with me all the time. I'm like, I will introduce myself. I'm like, I'm from the Bronx. I'm Dominican. I'm a Yankee fan and I run marathons. So summarize who I am from there. And then we can continue working because that brings to the workforce. It's been a cheat code I use all the time. It's like, I'm from the Bronx. I'm going to win. I'm going to make sure we get shit done because I'm a Yankee fan. We don't lose. I don't lose. That's not the way. I'm not a Knicks fan. Sorry to my Knicks fans, but I don't lose. Like, then that's just who I am because that's the mentality that I grew up in. My mom and my dad straight up don't speak English. They are only Spanish speakers. They've owned businesses, owned properties. So when people say, like, people have certain disadvantages, no, you build from the disadvantages you have, you find advantages. And my advantage has been I'm a hustler. Like, I'm going to get it done. By any means necessary.
Awesome. Okay, so let's backtrack a little. Let's go back to your Binghamton days.
So I am in Binghamton. This is 2008, 2009. Again, I partied very hard. My goal when I was in college was I have to get out of here within 4 years. That is not everybody's reality, nor is it the reality right now. Being in school for 5-6 years is perfectly fine. Like, do not be deterred of the time frame that it might take you to complete it. But I had a goal in my head. I'm like, I have to get out of here by 2000. I got in 2005. I'm out by 2009, no matter what. When I was in Binghamton, I didn't do any internships at all whatsoever. did not study abroad because I was so heavy in like the party mode and the networking mode. I was on campus e-boards. Like that wasn't my mind frame. A lot of my colleagues and a lot of my friends, they went and study abroad. But for me, that wasn't my reality. My reality was like, oh, I'm a campus face. I'm on campus, was on an e-board Jump Nation, the Juvenile Urban Multicultural Program. So that program created a very large network for me, and I felt very close to it because what Jump Nation did was it brought inner city students. So we would bring up to 100 to 150 eighth graders from New York City up to Binghamton for a 3-day weekend to show them what college was like. And it was pairing them with mentors, and the commitment for the mentors was a 4-year commitment. We paired up college students with these eighth graders for the weekend. And majority of those college students were people of color, students of different demographics and diverse backgrounds, so that eighth graders in New York City could get that concept of, oh, only white kids go away to college, where it wasn't. That wasn't the truth. It was, we were all there having fun, dressing and looking like them. And it was just motivation. And it was a 4-year commitment, because if we got you in eighth grade and we committed to being your mentor for 5 years, we got you to college.
Got it.
So that was what I was part of on campus. And at one point in my life, I'm like, okay, I'm going to be this lawyer, but I'm going to be a lawyer that fights for advocacy, student advocacy. Like, it was just mentality. Again, I was going to be a lawyer. I was going to graduate and go to law school. Meanwhile, I did not take any of the steps within undergrad to get myself into law school quickly. I started studying for the LSAT a year and a half after graduation. Like, I didn't take it immediately after. Didn't have the best GPA. But what I did have was a network. So my involvement on campus, I was heavily involved. I was connecting with everybody. I was making sure I knew who you were. I was using Facebook to my advantage. I was using any student council, like meetings, to meet with like other people on campus that I would have not normally reached out to. Like, I had a circle in Binghamton. You would have thought the school was at HBCU because we stuck together. Like, the people, students of color, were always together. We were always in each other's meetings, whether it was a CSA, Caribbean Student Union meeting, HASA, Haitian students, LASU, Latin American student, BSU. We were always together. We went to each other's meetings. Like, we stuck very closely together. The fraternities, the sororities, everybody was together. And that's how I functioned through Binghamton, was keeping that group of people by me. But now those people are also lawyers, doctors, CEOs, CFOs, executives. They're running your social media platform. Like, they're doing a lot. And I have that connection with all of these group of people who then, you always have to think about when you network, and that was what I did very good at Binghamton, was network, is that network has another branch of network. So you meet one person, it's like that seven, what is it? The
6 degrees of separation?
Yep. I have like one in New York City. Like, I pretty much know everyone in New York City. Unfortunately, fortunately, I know everybody. Should have become a recruiter.
But that's great though, right? Because I feel like, you know, especially if you're in college now listening to this, like, you may think I can only be an athlete or go abroad or join these things that help you travel to have a really good college experience and a meaningful college experience, but or have an internship. And you didn't have any of that, right? Like, your focus was...
My focus was truly, I'm a New York City kid with very strict parents. And my focus was getting to know people that were outside of the Catholic school environment, like getting to know people. And that was what I was really good at in Binghamton, connecting those dots and making those connections. I think there is this conception that college, because obviously you're paying for it.
Yep.
I have to get all the grades. I need to do all the internships. I need to study abroad because that is what college is about. And for me, that would have been great if I did it. And I don't knock anyone who's ever done it, because it's an amazing experience, mostly when you're undergrad and you're so young and you're taking all of this in. But for me, it was different. And I could give the excuse of not knowing, because I didn't know like how to go study abroad. Like, not many people of color in undergrad really studied abroad that I knew in Binghamton, because majority of us didn't know it. We didn't know where to find it on campus, nor were we necessarily looking for it. because we were so engulfed in being on campus leaders. And that was the reality for me. And I feel like if you're a college student right now, it's, yo, do what works for you. Like, even with this pandemic, is like there's this notion of, hey, you have to come out of this pandemic having like 10 new skills. Like, no, you don't. You don't. The point of getting there was to get the degree. Let me be real with you, as an HR person, unless you're going to be a lawyer, a doctor, a nurse, no one's checking for your GPA, bro. It doesn't even come out printed on your degree. If you're stuck in your college years, in the books, never going out to meet people, never experiencing anything, then you really took nothing out of college. That's how I look at it. Is like, I got to college and I learned how to balance a checkbook. I learned how to make sure that my bills were paid on time, because or else your light bill was going to get cut off. I learned how to cook. I learned how to survive in college so that the real world didn't take me by storm.
Okay. Walk me through what happens after you learn all of this and you're looking to graduate. Walk me through what your intentions are upon graduation and what reality is upon graduation.
So depending, like, I feel like class of 2020 is the class I'm going to relate to the most. Because class of 2009, when I graduated college, we had it rough. We graduated during an economic downturn. There were not that many jobs unless you were out there interning or you knew exactly what you wanted to do. So my reality, and I am not shy about it, is I graduated and I started. The first job I got offered was to work at Cablevision Optimum. I was providing you with cable services. I worked retail. Not the corporate office. I was in a Optimum uniform handing out cable boxes and taking payments. That was, for me, the reality check. Like, that was the humble point. Like, having a college degree doesn't grant you automatic job. But I had a network.
That's right.
So I was in working in Optimum, just trying to gather myself and figure out, okay, like, I need money to survive after college. I had a really bad experience working there because I got sick. I did not know where my benefits were. I did not know who my HR was. And I will share with you, in 2009, I had sent a Facebook status saying, I'm going to work in HR for Optimum. Watch. I always bring it back up because it is a reality check of, if you speak it to existence, it's going to happen. So I worked for Cablevision for a year, took that year. Cablevision offered to pay for like certifications. They offered to pay for classes. So knowing that, I took the advantage of taking LSAT courses at BCC in the Bronx. So a lot of people don't know that BCC is not only a undergraduate community college, but it has services that you can use, and they're cheaper than these bigger schools like the Binghamton's, the Manhattan Colleges, the Hofstra's. Like, you can use your community colleges to your advantage. And they have a free library that you can use as well. So for me, it was like, I could sit somewhere, because I didn't have an office in my parents' apartment. I can go somewhere quietly and focus. I used to go to BCC and study for my LSAT.
How'd you find out about that?
So for me, it was Google. Like, I always tell my nephew and nieces who are much younger, and they're this generation coming up, I guess Generation Z, who was so focused on social media and, you know, gaming. The internet has way more than just that. You can actually Google things to advance. And I would just search, okay, who's offering a free LSAT prep class? Because Kaplan costs like $2,000. And I'm like, couldn't afford Kaplan. How can I get this for cheap? And I always say, how can I get the same thing you're going to get for lesser money? So it's that, just try to get what you can for the same equivalent of education or services for cheaper. So BCC offered courses. They offer real estate classes, tax classes, so you can do taxes. They help you if you want to be a real estate agent, the real estate agent prep test. They offer LSAT prep test, GMAT prep test. So you can just go to BCC and get these services and pay the fraction of a cost. So I did that for the LSAT, and I studied for it, and I didn't do well. I did not at all. It was not, for me, law school was this thing, and taking the LSAT was like, whoa, like, this has nothing to do with law at all whatsoever. Just like the SATs. It's literally the LSAT. So it is a complete, I'm going to say it's a sham for me, because it was like, wow, this is not it. It didn't even ask me a single question about what I thought law is. It was more about critical thinking. And that reality came to me, and I was like, okay, I cannot stay working at Optimum, because that's not what I wanted to do. So I went on to work for a law firm. I'm not going to get into law school with what I scored on the LSAT. My undergrad GPA wasn't enough. I didn't have enough work experience to even explore just pitching that to an application or on an application. So I ended up working at this law firm, applying to grad school, and immediately getting offered an internship like 6 months into working into this law firm to work for a oil company based out of Westchester. That company, what I was interning as an HR professional. Because I'm in grad school, I put my information on internships.com. This is a word of advice, career cheat code. They actually do pull your resumes from these websites. Wow. Internship.com, Monster, Indeed. If you cater your resume properly, you can get chosen. It is real life. I will not kid you. I've worked in like 5 different companies, and I will get to that, how horrible apparently people tell you that sounds, but it really is not. All of them, not one, and I have a large network, but not one of those companies was it someone referring me to a job. I posted my information on LinkedIn, and I was getting chosen off of LinkedIn.
I could relate, and I vouch for that. I have my current job that way, by applying through LinkedIn and someone actually calling me from it. And I was like, oh, this thing works.
Yes. Not only that, it is investing yourself. If you are really looking for a job, there is a $50 a month. I think it's $50 a month or maybe 30 that you can pay for LinkedIn premium.
Yep.
And not only can you get your application goes to the top, but you can email recruiters with LinkedIn premium. So if you really want that job, you can even send out emails yourself and get directly to them. So just being mindful of that.
And you can do that through your job search and then no longer need premium after that, just so you know.
So just be completely mindful of these websites, keeping them up to date. If you are in the job hunt, making sure your resume is up to date and all your information, it is very useful, because these websites they actually pull talent. Like, that's how everyone is pulling talent now. So again, got into this internship program through internships.com. So to my college students, it is real. Used it. It was great for me then. And literally I posted my resume on there, and like 10 minutes later I got a call back. So it was kind of weird. I thought it was a sham, but it wasn't. Ended up working for this oil company called Castle Oil out in Westchester. This is, for me, it was like, there was 500 people in the company. 300 of them were union workers. 200 were corporate employees. And for me, I thought it was like, oh, this is super small. But this oil company was delivering oil throughout New York State and Connecticut and New Jersey. So I was exposed to a lot of different laws working in that HR environment, because I was exposed to a New York law. Yes, every state has its own law requirement, to New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut law. So it was understanding all of those dynamics. And from there, I interned for 4 months. This was September of 2011. By December, my internship was coming to an end. And I was just looking at my boss, who was a Latina from the Bronx, who went to Monroe High School. She was the best person ever. She is the best person ever. She said to me, she's like, do you want to come in full time? And I had no other choice at that point. It was like, okay, I could go back to this law firm and not do what I'm studying, or I can work in this oil company out of Westchester and with someone who's going to mold me into the professional and get that experience. And I ended up staying. I stood there for 2 years, got promoted like 3 times, negotiated salaries, was exposed to every corner of HR, from recruiting to compensation to strategic thinking and building out a company, sitting at the table with CEOs, CFOs, and just going through the motions when it comes to HR and all the things going on at a given time. From there, I think the reality of me becoming a lawyer was like going away. It was like, it wasn't it for me anymore. Mm-hmm. For me, it was like, how can I develop myself as this HR professional? And I was taking classes, and it is great when you are doing a master's, and I don't knock anyone who just goes in and pursues a master's that they have no idea what it's going to end up being like. But for me, it was great pursuing a master's degree that was directly correlated with what I was doing at work. So what I was learning in the classroom, I was legitimately applying it at work. It was from classes of recruiting, global benefits, accounting. I was like, why do I need accounting in HR? Yeah, you need a lot of accounting in HR because you're balancing people's salaries. What is their total compensation look like? How am I paying these bills with a budget that a company is giving a specific group? Like, okay, this is what you have to get benefits to these employees, and that's it. You cannot go over. Like, that became accounting, and I never in a million years thought that there was so much accounting in HR. Because I always thought HR was hire and fire. I forgot about the in-between, and I became the in-between.
Wow.
So just that, taking classes. And I ended up leaving the oil company to go on to work for Moody's. So Moody's is Fortune 500. It's basically a finance company. They are the credit ratings of major companies. So they provide credit ratings, so like a credit score to your Gaps and your Apples and all of these other large corporations, and give them a score so they can continue to grow. If like a Moody's or a S&P or a Fitch gives you a bad credit score, then your company's probably going to tank. That's pretty much kind of the concept of what they were. And I left the oil company to work for them, specifically focusing on diversity and inclusion. So I went on to Moody's to do that. What I will quickly tell you is not all areas of HR are the same. They are not all as fun. And I learned quickly about myself that diversity and inclusion was not it. It was not something that I was willing to fight for. And as a woman of color, a Latina from the Bronx, you would think like, Marcy, you don't like diversity and inclusion. No, I hate it. I am not here to convince someone why they need to have a certain group of people in their workforce. And that's not, it's just not who I was. And it kind of, for me, didn't drive along the side of this law mentality that I've always had. So that was a very short-winded career point or specialization that I had. I know a lot about it. I did it for 2 years, but it was just not my passion.
And that's okay, right? It's okay to take a role and experiment within the realms and figure out if you like it or not.
This is just overall, like, I feel like people start careers out of college and they are doing good, but you get bored or you get tired of it or you don't want to do that anymore. And it is okay to start over. It is okay. Like I said, I graduated. I worked in retail, telecom. I then went on to work in a law firm where I was making a lot of money. I was a paralegal because I thought that if I was a paralegal, it was going to get me closer to becoming a lawyer. No, it did not. And when I took that internship, so this is transparency. I was at the law firm, and this is again 2010, 2011, making $55,000 a year. That is big money for someone who was 23, 24 in 2010. Like, that's enough to hold you off on some brunches and pop in a few bottles at the club at least once a quarter.
For sure.
What it did when I took that internship, that $55,000, which is roughly like, I'm going to say, what, $27 an hour, became $13 because I was an intern. I was making $13 an hour. I went from roughly $27 to $13. And a lot of people looked at me like I was crazy. They're like, Marcy, you just moved out your house. Like, why would you take an internship? I'm like, you know what? This one step that I'm going to take backwards to be an intern post-college is going to launch me forward. And once I go through my whole resume, you'll realize how much that launched me. Never say to yourself, I won't start over. I cannot go to a lower salary. I can't do that. Like, that would be a step back. That step back can propel you forward. Like, I will say that to everybody. Like, you never know what that's going to do for you. So sometimes taking the internship, taking the volunteer work, you never know what that's going to do for you. And I always tell that to everybody, like, take the job. If you really want to do that, it might not pay you what you want. And trust me, it won't pay you what you want. You'll never get paid what you want. We all want to be billionaires going on vacations and living our best lives. You're never going to get paid what you want. But if it propels you and it gives you an experience and it educates you on something, take it. Take it. Like, you never know what that opportunity is going to open up. And I think that's where right now everybody's so money hungry and a lot of, like, I see a lot of graphic designers and they're like, oh no, I'm really good, I'm not gonna do this for free. Yo, bro, you never know who that free person you did that free for knows. You don't know who they know. So, and that's a cheat code. That's, I think everyone goes into jobs and they decline certain roles with this understanding, like, nah, I'm better than that. I was better than that internship. Trust me. Trust me. But taking it gave me exposure to learning and people that I would have never been exposed to before.
Okay. So you were strategic with it. It was a strategic shift.
I think everything you do should, you always have to strategize. Like, what is this going to do for me in 3, 4, 5 years? Like, just think of it like that. Like, me going on to Moody's, and I knew from like 4 months into that job that, hey, diverse inclusion ain't for me. But I was also working for Moody's. I was working for a very big name, being exposed to some big time players, because in diversity and inclusion, when you work in those, in that type of field of HR, you're bringing in speakers, you're exposing, like, you're doing a lot of networking within the company to make sure that people are getting the exposure they need so that they can get those promotions and move up in the ladder. And that exposure led me to sit down with head attorneys, people who were leading the market in Wall Street, like one of the most powerful people on Wall Street. And she was the CFO. Wow. And working with her, because I had to get these women exposed to her. Like, it was a very large dynamic. I, again, hated the work, but I was being exposed to a lot of people. And that, for me, since college, like I mentioned earlier, is very important. I need to have the right network to propel me to do other things. Did the Moody's gig. Cool. Left them. And God works in mysterious ways. I end up leaving them to go back to Cablevision.
So back to the front lines.
The irony here was I applied for a job to work at Optimum. And that job, I went for the interviews and quickly realized this is the job I promised myself back in that, I mean, Facebook status that I would get like 4 years after.
Wow.
And I got the job because of holding that retail role, because I knew what the demographic looked like. I knew the employee that I had to help. I was that employee in my past life, where a lot of people who work in HR, they've never... What I've learned and noticed about colleagues is that they've never done the grunt work. They've never been at the front line. They've never either worked in retail. They've never had to deal with a customer. And I knew all of that. So I understood what the role took. And I got the job and I was there for roughly a year. I had to leave because the commute was killing me. But it was every day I would show up to work and it was like, Marcy knows. Go to Marcy. Marcy knows what the employee needs. And it was dealing, my population was dealing with the New York City, the tri-state area, dealing with all of their disability, workers' comp, benefits, parental leaves of absences, dealing with all of their problems. But I knew the employee. So you could throw me in. I wasn't some uppity HR person. I know that's how everyone feels about HR. I wasn't that. I was the girl from the Bronx. I knew what it meant to work the front line, and I could communicate and I could relate to the employee. And that has been my strong point. So that's why I always say, be yourself, be who you are, tell them where you're from. So that'd give you an opportunity that you probably wouldn't get otherwise. Because once you can relate to an employee or relate to a population, like if you're, then this goes for any job. If you're working in sales and you are put to sell Lamborghinis, let's say, right? You're selling Lamborghinis in New York City, and you get clients like, hey, like people in New York City come from all different facets. If you can sell to everybody, then that makes you a perfect salesman. If you could sell to the rapper who comes from Third Ave and came up off some money, we don't know how, but they came up off of it and they can buy the Lamborghini, and you can relate to them the same way you can relate to the trader on Wall Street who also came to buy that Lamborghini, you're the most amazing salesman. Being from where we're from is a transferable skill. And I always say that. I'm like, you never know. Like, I think we had this conversation where you are very good at connecting the dots and creating relationships and being able to pull information from people. That is who you were before doing that job, before college. Like, you've probably always been that person and you're just able to translate it.
Absolutely. Wait, so you were there for about a year because of a long commute.
Career cheat code. If you are not happy, leave. If you're not happy, go. Let me tell you why. I took a job working Cable Vision. It was amazing. Worked in Bethpage, Long Island. That is roughly an hour and 15 without traffic from the Bronx into the middle of Long Island. It was great until you start hitting traffic. Start realizing is I have hobbies. I like to run. I play sports. I like to do things after work. I like to meet up with my network of friends to go to happy hour. Couldn't do that working in Long Island because I was never going to make anything. I couldn't make the happy hours. I couldn't make the parties. I couldn't make my sport. Couldn't train for my marathons because I was out in Long Island and I wouldn't get home till 7:30, 8 o'clock. That became a reality for me where wherever I needed to work, I needed to be happy. I needed to make sure that whatever that looked like, if I have to do this every day, Monday through Friday, for 8 hours, 9 hours a day, I have to be happy doing it. And the commute was making it miserable for me.
And I love that you're sharing this because I love that you were able to own your career, right? Like you took the role because you told yourself years before you would do this and you were presented the opportunity. Now you've done this. If you're not happy while doing it, it's okay to change your mind and say, okay, great. Yep. Now let's pivot to the next move. I did what I felt like I needed to do, which was take this role and do it for a little while.
Yep. And that's exactly what I did. I promised myself that I would go back. I did it. It was great, gained valuable experience, on to the next one. And I think we grow up in this mentality that you have to work in places for 5-10 years. I've just given you 3 companies, the oil company, 2 years, Moody's, 1.5 years, Cablevision, 1 year. And then I went on to Tory Burch, which is retail, for another 2 years. I was moving. I was not staying stagnant. Like, do not stay stagnant. I will say it now, and it will be reiterated in the company that I went to after Tory Burch. At Tory Burch, I did 2 years. It was amazing. I was global benefits. I got to hone in to what I'm doing now, what I'll probably do for a long time. I got exposed to Tory Burch. I would sit down with a billionaire and tell her, hey, that's not a good idea. That's not going to work for your people. Wow. Because you have to be that word of reason for a lot of these billionaires, millionaires, when they're making a decision for a company that might impact them long term. So you have to be, and you have to be okay with telling a billionaire or telling a CEO, a president, an owner, a founder of a company, like, that's not a good idea. And trust me, they will respect you more by being honest than being a yes man and lying the whole way through. Like, it's not, if that's going to make the company fail. Yep. So was with them for 2 years, left Tory Burch.
And wait, by that time, did you already have, you already had your master's completed by the time you got to Moody's, right?
So no, let me tell you, when, again, I had this mentality out of high school, I have to finish undergrad 4 years, done. Everyone thinks, and this was me too, thinking, hey, I got to finish my master's degree in 2 years. 2 years was not my reality. 3 years wasn't my reality. 4 years wasn't my reality. I was taking one class per semester and not including winters and summers. So I was taking the summers and winters off. I was taking one class at a time.
Was there a reason why you did that?
It was for me. I never had to work and go to school. Like, having to do both in a real life, like you're going to work 9 to 5, not working a retail. I had a retail job in undergrad where I worked in Foot Locker on the weekends. That was not the reality here. I was working a full-time job and also having to go to school. And I did not know how to balance that. So for me, the easiest way to do it was taking one class at a time, where there was a point where when I was at Cablevision, I had to take the whole year off because I couldn't even make it to my classes because that commute was killing me.
Absolutely.
So I took time off. I didn't graduate from my master's till 2017. Started 2011, graduated 2017. And I had to negotiate that graduation. You have to finish degrees within a certain time frame. And I kept extending my time frame. And I had to write. Again, my negotiation skills, my writing, my reading helped me to my advantage. Because I would read the bylaws of grad school, the graduate program that I was in. And if you had reasons as to why you could not complete it, just put that in your kind of appeal of, don't kick me out. Sorry, my bad. I'm working, which looks good for grad school. So it took me 6 years. But for me, my pitch was, when I graduate here, I look like a good statistic for you guys because I'm actually working in the field that I took a degree in.
Got it. Do you feel like having the master's in human resources made a difference in your career?
Yes, the dollars.
That's a difference.
That's what I will say is, again, I not having a degree, hey, whoever doesn't, that's not a problem. But there comes a point in your career, depending on the career you're pursuing, that you need to have the degree. And the degree is going to determine the dollar sign. If you only have an undergraduate right now, undergraduate degree, because of online learning and the accessibility to it, like, just think of it, if everyone can get it, it's not as great. So because we can all get degrees now, they're available online, you can kind of pick one out of a pamphlet and it's yours if you put your mind to it, it has become like a high school degree. The master's degree is now like your undergrad back in the day. Like, that's, it's so important to have a master's degree depending on the field that you're in. So for me, it was important. It was either that or I had to get a certificate for HR, which took the same amount of time to get as the master's degree, where my master's degree, at the end of the day, I have a master's. It doesn't matter what it's in, I have a master's. Where if I were to pursue the certificate, it would be a certificate in HR.
Got it.
Yeah, so at the end of the day, I have an MS. What the MS is in has nothing to do with you. I have one.
Got it. Okay, so you're telling me about transitioning over to Tory Burch.
Yeah, so Tory Burch was amazing. Worked in retail, luxury retail. This is where I got exposed to more global aspects of HR, understanding the retail kind of demographic, how it all works, how retail makes money, how they don't make money, how they move on recruiting, why benefits are important, why understanding your people is important. Right now, retail is suffering. But being there, I just didn't fit in at all. I'm a Bronx girl. I'm not into fashion too much. And though I'm in HR, it mattered. And I learned that so quickly how much it mattered. And I felt it for me. And I couldn't be, again, after leaving Cablevision for a commute that I was unhappy, I couldn't be unhappy going to work. I was getting there and it was draining. You know, Tory Burch is a great company. And depending on who you are, it can work for you. It just did not work for me. And I was very vocal about it. Working in HR and being who I was, for me, I would go to the head of HR and say, hey, this is what I am feeling. What are we going to do about it? And nothing was being done. And that's when you have to make a career decision, whether it's, do I stay here and deal with this and realize that there's some weird things happening? Or do I walk away? So ended up walking away from that, went on to a law firm.
Of course you did.
Yeah, went on to go to work for one of the America's top 50 law firms, a big boy. But you know, there's red flags that happen and you read those red flags. If you're recruiting for a company and you start seeing things that aren't fitting well, take that, because that is probably what you're going to experience. It's like getting with a boyfriend. You can't change a man. You can't change a company. As much as you want to. I walked in there and I will tell you, after dealing with my environment at Tory Burch for 2 years and knowing that I was not happy there, it took me 1 week to realize at this law firm that it was not for me. And the reason I took this job, again, transparency, I was at Tory Burch. I was making roughly 70 grand and I wanted money so bad. And that was my argument for leaving there. I'm like, I need money. You guys are not paying me what I deserve. I'm doing global things. I need to get paid. I did the market research. I knew what the deal was. It's like, I deserve to get paid X amount of dollars. And they said they couldn't pay me it. So I found somebody that would.
Love it.
I went on to the law firm and the law firm offered me the 100K that I had been fiending for. When I tell you fiending, if you go on my Twitter, Marcy TV to my people, you go to my Twitter, I used to tweet this every day, 100K by 30. I used to say it every single day. I was going to get 100K by 30. Got the job. Got the 100K 1 week. I was like, I hate it here. Oh my God, do I hate it here. And I immediately went onto LinkedIn, applied to more jobs, got reached out by WeWork. I didn't name the name of the law firm because I will not put my name out there for that law firm because I don't even put it on my resume. And it is okay to not put things that you don't think are going to go very well on your resume. Please, you can edit, you can put on your resume whatever you want. If you feel like you worked for something that was too short-lived or it was not a good experience, don't put it on there. Just don't do it to yourself. And that is a career cheat code. Always say to everyone, I've gotten a lot of jobs through LinkedIn, and LinkedIn is like a source now. So I always tell, hey, this is my resume. When they ask you, hey, there's a gap in your employment. Yeah, it's on my LinkedIn. Didn't think it was relevant to this job. And that's okay. You can say that. I also get the question. So I go to WeWork. I get an interview question while I was interviewing for WeWork is, hey, you jumped from companies rather quickly. And that is a real life question. You're going to get that if you are a career jumper like me. Not career jumper, but a company jumper. I like to say it. I jump from company to company when I need to give myself a promotion. And that is my answer. That is the answer that I use. When I get asked, why have you been in places for a short amount of time? It's like, I've self-promoted. And every time I leave somewhere, I'm promoting myself. Whether it is with a higher title or more money, I am self-promoting. That is a good answer. From a head of HR, it is a good answer. Literally have heard it from heads of HR. If you're telling people that you are self-promoting, it is a perfect response.
No, it puts the onus back on the company, right? That means if you're leaving this company, it's only because they didn't treat me according to plan. So if you don't want me to leave, yeah, treat me according to plan.
Treat me right. Treat me right. If you want me to stay with you, treat me good. Again, there are relationships. You working for someone is a relationship. And that is what I've done. I've been in relationships. And a lot of them, I've been committed. I haven't cheated. I just leave when it's not working anymore. So I end up getting the job at WeWork, and it was a great time, but I was also in a place during a rough patch of a company, but it gave me everything I needed. I worked for a big boy. I worked for big boys. I will say big girls, I guess I will say big girls, because I've worked for Tory Burch. That is a big name to have in your resume. Moody's, big name to have on your resume. WeWork is a big name, whether drama filled or not, it is a big name to have on your resume. I was in HR world perspective, I juggled a 10,000 employee company. In January, my time at WeWork came to an end, and I ended up joining Sprinklr, where I am now. And again, I think things that I've taken away, the network. I got my job because back when I was leaving Tory Burch, I was interviewing with AppNexus. The hiring manager at AppNexus gave me the job. They were acquired by AT&T. If you know anything about acquisitions, my people, when your company is acquired, you might lose your job or you might not be able to hire anymore. So she couldn't hire me because her headcount got taken away. So didn't get to work with her then. I wanted to leave WeWork in January. I reached out to her again, and this is cheat code. Keep in contact with your hiring managers. Keep in contact with those recruiters that you ever interview with, because you never know where those people might end up. Jumping ship, and those people that jump ship, I end up interviewing with them again.
So these are people, not that you worked for, but people that you were just interviewing with.
Yep. Then again, network mentality. I believe in you are as strong as your network. So LinkedIn is your friend. When you're interviewing, you're usually, if you're a stalker like me, or not a stalker, just a good interviewer, you are looking everybody up. So I would look people up. I would immediately friend them. No, we're not coworkers, but I have contact with you. I have created a relationship with you. So now you are my LinkedIn friend. So when I'm in the job hunt and I see that you've now posted something that I'm interested in, or you've moved to another company, it is as simple as keeping in contact with these people on LinkedIn. And when you need them later on, just reach back out. LinkedIn makes it easy for you, network-wise, to just, if someone gets promoted, congratulations. You don't even have to type it out. You just click it. Congrats. Someone leaves a company, congrats on the new job. Congrats on your anniversary. Hi, how are you? It is so easy on LinkedIn. So use it. It's a tool. It's a powerful tool. Use it to your advantage. And I've used it to my advantage. Again, every job that I've mentioned, from Tory Burch, WeWork, Moody's, those were direct LinkedIn.
Yeah, the beauty of doing things like that, just simple things like you mentioned, just like congrats on your work anniversary. Now this person at least sees your name maybe once a year. But once a year is much more than going 6 years without talking to someone and say, hey, y'all hiring? What y'all doing over there? Or I see that post. Like now it's like, wait, I haven't spoken to you in 5 years. Why would I even entertain this conversation? But if it's someone that at least is used to seeing you, it's like, okay, this makes sense.
And this goes for anything. Like if you have friends who are being in industries and they're climbing the ladders, it's nothing but going and saying a happy birthday. It is nothing but saying, hey, what's up? Even if the conversation ends in a nothing, chilling, and that's it, they're going to remember who you are. You did not reach out for a favor every single time. You reached out to genuinely ask how they were doing. And I think that's part of the networking skill that I have that a lot of people don't, is if you have that network, make sure that you're keeping in contact with that network, that you're building that network. Like, I've known you for how long? Me and you have probably hung out maybe once or twice, but it's a constant Facebook happy birthday. We share the same birthday. It's a how are you, a quick like of a picture, and never asking for anything. And that's just how relationships work. And I think people lose that aspect. And that's what makes some people great dot connectors, great networkers. It's when you go to those meetings, you go to those networking happy hours, and you collect those cards. It's not just to collect them to say, I have a stack of business cards of people's names. No, it's when you get home, you sit down and you take your time and you email each one of those cards. I've done panels, and a lot of students will ask, oh, can I get your email? I'll probably get an email from two of those students. I'll meet like 60 students, and all of them will ask for an email, but none of them understand the concept of follow up. I'm not going to remember your face, but if you email me, I'll remember the constant email and the name. And if I come across that name, and trust me, in HR, I come across a lot of names. And people will say, Marcy, you went to Binghamton. I have a resume here from Binghamton. And I'm looking at it and I'm like, don't know the name, but it says Binghamton. Let me see who they are. Somehow, somewhere, we're all connected. And I'll say, hey, keep going with the interview. Or, no, I don't know them. And that's really how it goes. Like, in my world, it is constantly, that's how it goes. And the people that I have kept connected with in the field that I'm in, so transparency is key. I am a global benefits manager. I make 130K. Right? Very transparent. My connections and my networks in HR have led me to know that that salary is what I deserve, because I have people in compensation. So I always tell my friends, I'm a good person to have in your back pocket. And I don't ask for a lot. Like, wish me happy birthday. Say, how's my dog? That's pretty much. And I can get you salary information straight up. Like, don't go into an interview and that's career cheat code. Like, make sure you know who your network is, because everyone in your network can give you a tool that you need to move forward. So like for me, it's when my friends need to negotiate a salary, like, yo, Marcy, what's the range? I can tell you what you should be asking for. And I'm also not a liar, but I don't hold, like, some people will be shy about telling people their salaries. Nah, I'm going to tell you how much I'm worth. I'll tell you the laws in certain states that you can negotiate things without telling anyone what you're worth. And it's just coaching people to get the right money. I see it all the time. And I'm like, don't lowball yourself. Like, get your bread, career cheat code, get your money, get the bag. Don't be loyal to these companies. I will tell you this. I've been in like five of them. I'm not loyal. I've given myself increases. I literally, that is my MO. I tell my managers that straight up. It's like, I'm not going to be with you for busting my ass for a year and a half if I'm not going to get paid. And HR research shows that after a year and a half, your employer has gotten back the money that they put into you. So whether that's that salary that they've paid you, the benefits that they've given you, the amount of time it took them to recruit you, train you. And if you're really good at what you do, you don't even need training. So sometimes you're saving the money, because if you start, like I usually start places, in benefits are the same no matter where you go. I can start working for a company and within 2 weeks, I'm self-functioning without the need of any help or any training. And it's just experience. I think the meme is, don't pay me for the amount of time it takes me to do the job. Pay me for the amount of years it took me to learn it. I know the job. So for me, that salary that you're paying me, you're getting your money's worth for that salary within a month. But studies show it's supposed to be within a year and a half.
And I appreciate you being so transparent, right? Because I think that's really the premise and the whole purpose of this show is, like, there's a lot of information that we don't know. So there are people, I'm sure, that are listening to this say, hey, I've been doing this for just the same amount of time as Marcy in similar types of fields. Maybe I'm underselling myself. Maybe I should be really tapping into and learning about what I should be making and how I should be doing this, right? Because you started with $13 an hour, right? Like, over years have now grown to get to this point, but it's taken a lot of learning and a lot of time going to get your master's degree, putting in the hours, and it's been a long road, right? But it's great to be able to share that back out so that people know this.
And for me, it's that's always been my tool. It's like I have so many colleagues who I've trained under me. And from every single one, they will always say, Marcy, never withheld. Like, look, I'm not scared of you taking my job. And you should never be scared of someone taking your job. I always call it as pay it forward. Somebody taught you, teach someone else. And it just creates a better team. Like the day I become a consultant or open my own or lead an HR team, a whole team, and I become the head of HR. Like in most companies, when structure changes and there's a new executive or a new leadership, do you know what that leadership always does? They bring in people they've worked with so that they could come work for them. That's always how it goes.
Absolutely.
Whether it's a CEO, CFO, that's why people get scared when there's new CEOs, new CFOs, because they're like, they're going to bring in their people. That is 100% true. And if I ever become, when I do become, this will happen, when I become the head of HR somewhere, doesn't matter where I do it, I'm going to bring my people. I have, and I'm very adamant. I'm like, I like to see women of color. I like to see younger people working. I like to see people that never worked in the job. Like, I'm okay with you starting to work and never have done HR. But if you have a skill that I think would be excellent, let's hone in on that skill and bring it in here. So if you worked in marketing or in publishing, that means you know how to write and you know how to sell, you know how to pitch an idea. I need that. So I think we had discussed this before, but there are skills that are career cheat codes, having transferable skills. So if you're good, if you worked in Foot Locker, I'll give you my example, worked in Foot Locker 4 years of college, that's what I did undergrad. I didn't do anything in relation to some corporate big job. I sold sneakers for 4 years of college. What transferable skill did I gain from that is I have people skills. I have customer service skills. I want to make sure that the client is happy. In HR, how does that transfer? The client is the employee. If you are happy, I'm doing a good job. Right? So transferable skills. Network. Your network is who you are. If you have a weak network or you did not hone that network, you did not coddle and make sure that that network was cared for, then when you have your back against the wall and with right now COVID-19, a lot of people are getting laid off. People are going to need jobs. They're going to depend on those networks that they had if they're able to get their same job. If not, that network has to kick in and try to help you get a job, right? So your network is who you are, and then be yourself. I think that is so important. And again, I've negotiated the hell out of some salaries. Like again, I've been taking money and I've earned my money, but I've been taking money from a lot of people. Good. Because I am who I am. I'm going to ask, and I believe in the rule of my life is if you don't ask, you will not receive. Closed mouths do not get fed. If you are at a company and you're making 70 racks and you think that you should be making 90, yet you have never gone about out of your way to ask your manager for a meeting to talk about the money, then you're not going to get that.
Okay. So walk me through, just so that folks understand, because I think you mentioned where your career kind of could go, which is you can now go, if you've done this type of role for the last 10 years or whatever, you can now transfer these skills and say, I want to open up my own consulting firm. I want to run HR for a large organization. What other kind of opportunities are out there that could be your next step?
So for me, I think next steps, like being in HR for 10 years, if today I said, I don't want to do this anymore, what else can I do? Or if you've been in customer service for 10 years, whatever the case may be. If for me specifically, I've been working in HR for 10 years of my life. And I think next step, if I didn't want to work in HR ever again, I would go to marketing. I would love to work in marketing, pitching like commercial ideas or event ideas to big companies. Why? In HR, working in benefits, all I do all day is market stuff that we have. So if I have an EAP program, I have to make sure that I market it in a way that you as the employee feel like you need it, that you're going to go out and call and reach out to EAP. If I have EAP is the employee assistance program, which all of you have, if you work for a large corporation, take advantage of it during this time because it'll help you. It is like counseling. It gives you therapy sessions and it's free. It literally does not come out of your paycheck. Most employers offer it. A lot of employers are pushing it right now because people are going to go through a lot of mental health issues. So take it to your advantage. So things like that. But people are always, there's a stigma around EAP. So I have to market it a certain way to make sure that you're calling and you're using it. Because people feel like, oh, if I call into this EAP line, it's going to come back to my boss that I have mental health issues. And that's not true.
Got it. So can you help me understand a week in the life of your type of role, just so people understand, like, what does it mean to be in charge of benefits globally?
So in benefits, the large aspect of it is knowing what your people need. So sometimes I won't know because no one is telling me anything, but every company has to offer their employee benefits by law. Because of that, we have statistics, right? So if we offer you the most plain Jane stuff, which is medical, dental, and vision, every time you go to the doctor, I get information. And this is a Monday morning. I have meetings with brokers every week to see how our benefits are doing. If a company is paying for it, it wants to know how it's being used. So if you go see a doctor and majority of your population is going to see the doctor for mental health issues. So everyone's going to a therapist, everyone's going to seek a counselor. I get a report every week saying the utilization of benefits. If my utilization is being driven because of mental health, right, I have to then start looking at the plan to see how I can enhance the mental health portion of the plan. So I'm looking at the plan documents, seeing, okay, how much do people pay out of their pocket? How many, if I have 1,000 employees enrolled and there are 150 all going to the doctor for mental health, then I need to enhance my mental health benefit because I have at least 10% of my employees are going to the doctor for the same thing. And I also have to figure out what is causing this mental health issue, right? So other things we start to look at. So for myself, I ask my broker in a week, this is all 1 week, hey, find me all companies that offer mental health tools, whether it be like a mindfulness application, a teledoctor, like so they don't have to go out to the doctor. Like, can they go to a virtual doctor? Maybe I need to do something on my 401k. So let me reach out to the 401k provider to do like a webinar on financial wellness because mental health problems can be driven through financial issues. So you start looking at it, oh, like a big picture. And that is my week to week, is constantly looking at the plan and seeing what is driving what and what can I implement to get to my employees. And then the bigger picture is this accounting side of my brain that has to constantly kick in, is do I have the budget? And if I don't have the budget, what can I get for free? So any of you who may watch this and know anything about Marcy is I'm going to get it. I'm going to get it. I'm a hustler from the Bronx. I'm going to figure out a way that even if you have to give me 3 months for free, I'm going to get it. So that is what I do on a week to week, day to day, is look, I'm constantly analyzing numbers. I'm looking at enrollments. I'm looking at, I have a new hire just started 30 days and they didn't enroll in anything, yet their manager is complaining to their HR people partner that they're not performing. There might be a mental health problem. Hey, did you enroll in our plan? Did you know we have these offerings? Oh, you didn't? Hey, this is an opportunity when you can. Maybe you need to use our EAP. Like, it's just looking at everything holistically all the time.
Got it. That is my job. And in your role, you're really at this point, making the employees their best version of themselves. And then yes, in turn, they then give the company the best version of themselves.
Exactly. So it's looking at everything. So looking at benefits, looking at time off. So again, all things that drive, right? So if I have mental health claims going skyrocketing, that means my disability claims, because people can take time off because of mental health problems, are skyrocketing. That means that people are now absent. So time off is being impacted. Everything takes an impact off of this one claim, right? So my pregnant mother is like, I look at that like, oh, somebody's about to give birth. Maybe we should allow them to work from home. Let's reduce their schedule. Make sure that the workload, like, we're not being biased over pregnant people. No, we're just making sure that they have a healthy pregnancy.
Okay. How do you get better at what you do?
Read. I don't read for fun. I'm trying right now with COVID-19 and trying to read for leisure. I do not read for leisure as much as I should because I constantly have to read for work. So that lawyer that I wanted to be like 10 years ago is definitely here live and direct because I constantly have to read. I have to watch law webinars. I have to read new laws. Like there are about 5 laws that just dropped with COVID-19. If nobody knows about them, the CARES Act, which impacts your employee benefits, the emergency FMLA that just dropped. So all of these laws are now impacting my day to day. Depending on your health provider, if any of you have Cigna, Cigna is now made COVID tests free. So I had to read throughout that entire like 200 page document that they just dropped to see, okay, if it's now a free test, how is that going to drive my plan cost? Because now I have to provide this free to my employees. So I have to constantly read and literally Google and research. And I'm always reading up on things that are not as fun to the everyday person. But for me, it's like, this is going to make my job better. I'm going to be a better person if I have knowledge. Because again, my day-to-day is simplifying these tough concepts to an employee in like 2 sentences.
Got it. And are there any of those books that you would recommend to anyone, either that have impacted you personally or professionally through HR or not necessarily?
So, I mean, HR-wise, I mean, it's really up to you what you want to get out of it. So again, Google is your friend. So anything you want to learn, anything you want to know, like just Google and you'll find an article. I think books that just have helped me overall as a person, The Alchemist. I consider myself the alchemist. I do not quit. I have been in rough situations where things have not worked out in my favor, working for companies or just an overall life. And again, I told you I was a rule breaker straight up. I've been arrested twice. I've had to figure out some things. And some most people would quit because like I've been arrested. I'm never going to get a job again. Nope. I'm going to figure out a way to make this work for me. So The Alchemist has definitely been a book because it put me at a position where I was at the goal line and something happens and you're like, forget it. I'm not going to do this anymore. Like it's not working. And again, I've worked for a lot of companies. I've been fired in my past life. That has never deterred me from saying, maybe this is not for me. It's like, oh, maybe this company is not for me and let me just move on to the next. So I think that has been helpful. The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, it just makes you focus. And as a lot of CEOs, CFOs recommend the book, they're not recommending him out their ass. Like it's a legit helpful tool. I'm just a global benefits manager from the Bronx. And it is super helpful because I want to do 1700 things at any given time. And I also, it's like my mind is functioning so rapidly that at times I'm like, I just don't want to do anything. So it keeps you focused. So I think those 2 books have been super helpful. The Alchemist by Paulo Coelho and The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People.
Awesome. Okay. Is there anything else that we haven't covered today that the world should know about Marcy?
I went to Binghamton from the Bronx. I am your local neighborhood HR guru. Like HR is not scary. We're not complete assholes. I promise you we're not. I truly love what I do, not because of being in HR is so cool. It's more so to dumb it down or make it layman is I get to help people. Again, coming where we're coming from, a lot of things are not explained. Like I said earlier, like I didn't study abroad because I just didn't know, or I didn't do certain things when I was in high school or in elementary school because my parents didn't know. So for me, coming from that background, my job, and I take it very serious, is to make sure that you know. Make sure that you're aware of everything you have. Take advantage of everything a company has to offer you. I will say this once and I will say it 1500 times. It's like, look at everything you're being offered. When you took the job, you probably took it because you love the company and you love what you do, but you also like getting paid. There are so many benefits that companies offer that people do not take advantage of. My job is to make sure that some of you know it, even if I don't work with you, but there's things hidden that they're there and they're definitely yours. Whether it's they pay for education, they pay for a certificate, they have Audible books for free. Take advantage, mostly during this time, take advantage of everything. Guys, if you want, I am here. I know there are so many laws dropping. So if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, Instagram, Marcy TV, Marcy TV, I am your local HR guru. So if you have any questions, if you're currently going through unemployment, don't have benefits, don't know what to do, I can guide you through some of the benefits of these new laws that are dropping.
I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did and believe on the mission we're on, please like, rate, and subscribe to this podcast on whatever platform you're using, and share this podcast with your friends and your networks. Make sure you follow us on Instagram and LinkedIn at Career Cheat Code, and tell us people or careers you would like to see highlighted. See you next week with some more cheat codes. Peace.